chapter 2, verse number 64 today. Every day we discuss serially one verse from the Bhagavad Gita. So today we have reached second chapter, verse number 64. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo. So I'll chant the verse first, this Sanskrit verse which is written here, and then Ragadvesha Ragadvesha Vimuktaistu Vishayan Indriyaischaran Atma Vashyair Vidheyatma Prasadam Adigachati. His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. So translation, but a person free from all attachment and aversion and able to control his senses through regulative principles of freedom can obtain the complete mercy of the Lord. Purport. It is already explained that one may externally control the senses by some artificial process, but unless the senses are engaged in the transcendental service of the Lord, there is every chance of a fall. Although the person in full Krishna consciousness may apparently be on the sensual plane, because of his being Krishna conscious, he has no attachment to sensual activities. The Krishna conscious person is concerned only with the satisfaction of Krishna and nothing else. Therefore, he is transcendental to all attachment and detachment. If Krishna wants, the devotee can do anything which is ordinarily undesirable. And if Krishna does not want, he shall not do that which he would have ordinarily done for his own satisfaction. Therefore, to act or not to act is within his control, because he acts only under the direction of Krishna. This consciousness is the causeless mercy of the Lord, which the devotee can achieve in spite of his being attached to the sensual platform. Hare Krishna. I welcome everyone to our weekly this program, that every day in the evening we discuss a verse from the Bhagavad Gita. So we have many guests today. I welcome them all to this daily class that we have. Today's verse is a very interesting verse where Krishna mentions to Arjun, is speaking to Arjun. He mentions how a person free from all attachment and aversion and able to control his senses through the principles of freedom can obtain the complete mercy of the Lord. And we'll just try to see how this is done, how we could understand this statement of Lord Krishna. First thing that we could learn is, usually whenever we talk about spiritual life, we talk about purity in our lives, the first thing that comes to our mind is that we have to be free from attachment to something. Usually, go to some temple, you go to any place of worship, the first thought that will come to your mind is, I should not carry my ordinary thoughts with me when I go there. There is a atmosphere of detachment there. You'll see people in those places with simple clothes, not very, flashy clothes. Whereas outside, the more flashy you are, the more you are better. As they say, if you have it, flaunt it. But in places of worship, in ashrams, or in places where people are trying to advance on the path of spirituality, things will be simple. So one can easily understand this, that to advance on the path of spirituality, there is a need for us to be free from different attachments that we have. But one important point that Krishna makes in this verse is that he has to be free from all attachment and aversion also. So attachment is, I like this, I like that, and when I come here, like suppose you like some dishes and you come to some temple, any temple for that matter, and you receive some prasad. Now, sometimes we may not like that particular prasad that you get. But, you know, if some child says, you know, Papa, I don't want this prasad. I don't like this dish. When you prepare this dish at home, I don't like this. So I'll not eat this. No, you know, the parents will say, don't worry, you know. Don't think too much about it. This is prasad. This is the mercy of the Lord. Eat it. So even though you have attachment to, you know, your way of life, don't get into that when you come to a place of worship. Be free from it. So take whatever is offered. Whatever is offered in the temple, take it. But Krishna mentions, you have to be free from aversion also. Aversion is, suppose a person who has some attachments for something, and then, you know, he thinks that I should not carry all those things here. But then he does not like certain things, that also he should not carry to the temple. Both aspects are mentioned by Krishna. How do we understand this? A simple story that comes to my mind is, there were two Buddhist monks. And, you know, Buddhist monks are mostly interested in getting peace. So you won't find them much in cities. They are roaming somewhere in forests and like that. So these two monks also, they were roaming in the forest. And they came to a river. And to go ahead, they had to cross the river. Now, as they were trying to cross the river or contemplating on it, they also saw an old woman there. And apparently, you know, she also wanted to cross the river. Somehow, because of her old age, she could not do that. So she requested to these monks that, you know, if you can carry me across this river, then it will be very nice for me. I can be benefited. Now, the thing is that because they were monks, you know, they are expected to stay away very much from the opposite gender. They cannot have close association. That's one of the principles. So, you know, one monk thought that, I have to think about this. But the other monk said, no, don't worry, I'll carry you across. You know, if I can help you in some way, I'll be benefited. So he lifted this old woman and carried her across the river. It was a, you know, shallow river, so they could both get across. When he reached the other shore, he put the woman down and said, okay, fine, you know, now we walk on, we continue our journey. And the woman and the monks, they departed from each other. Now this monk, you know, he sensed that the other person who was not very much favorable for carrying the woman was carrying something in his mind. You know, he was not speaking very clearly. He could sense it, you know, you can sense in somebody. So after some time anyway, he was continuing with his journey, both these people. So this monk said, you should not have done that. You know, after some 7 or 8 hours of silence, finally he broke up. He said, you should not have done that. I said, what? What shouldn't I have done? So you should not have carried that woman with you. You don't know, as monks, we are not supposed to have association with women. So this monk who had carried the woman, he smiled and said, I carried that woman for 15 minutes. Now you have been carrying that woman for 8 hours now. So this person who carried the woman across the river, he just, you know, kept the woman there and just forgot about it. He is on his path again. But this other monk who was, you know, contemplating on this, you know, why did he do that? Why did he do that? We are supposed to stay away. He is carrying the woman in his mind for 8 long hours. So this is, you know, a perception how we have to be free from attachment as well as aversion to certain things. If it is necessary and if it can help somebody on the path of spirituality, we should do it. Of course, you know, if it's getting disturbing for you, then you can take a decision otherwise. But fairly speaking, if it's not disturbing you too much, we can help somebody. Second thing that Krishna mentions, Prabhupada mentions in the purport is, it is already explained that one may externally control the senses by some artificial process. What is this artificial process? Artificial thing is, you know, something like plastic. You have natural substances available, but then, you know, to suit your needs, you design something artificially. But the problem is, with anything artificial, because it is not natural, there are problems that are associated with it. Example, you know, the same example of plastic. We have plastic everywhere now. We carry goods in plastic. When we go to the market, we purchase vegetables, fruits, we put it in plastic. Even simple things like drinking water, now people carry plastic bottles. But now there is a big problem. It has solved the problem of ease. That now we can carry water anywhere we want without having much weight. Plastic is very light. Plastic is very portable. But the problem is there is a large pollution that is happening. And nobody knows what to do with it. Is it not? So whenever we try to digress from what is natural, then we end up creating another problem. It's like, suppose I have a hole here on my cloth. And to patch up this hole, I don't know what to do. So instead of sewing it together with a thread, I cut out a portion of cloth from this part and then patch up this part. Say, okay, see, you know, this hole is now not there. But then what about this patch? So I cut some cloth from here and put it here. Does not work. So artificial attempts at regulating our senses, at overcoming attachments in our life are not going to work. Our attempts, our process has to be natural. Somebody could say, what if, you know, I practice something natural, but it could be something like, you know, very drastic. Suppose in my traveling, sometimes, you know, when we are traveling, we use trains, we use buses, and somebody near us, you know, latest thing is you have film song ring tunes on your mobiles. So somebody's phone rings, he gets to hear something, and then, you know, people around him also get to hear some things. You are sitting in a train, somebody in front of you opens a newspaper in front of your face. You can't just close your eyes. You know, it's all there. Now, somebody may think of, you know, not getting exposed to all these disturbing things, but then you're just forced there. So somebody could say that I'll just, you know, take a drastic step. There's a story of one saint who was getting disturbed by certain things in his life. He was affected by lust. So he just plucked out his eyes. He said, you know, common saying goes, na rahega bas, na bajegi basuri. So he just thought, you know, I am seeing all these sights which agitate me with these eyes. I just pluck out these eyes. But will that work for us? Will that work for us? That is the question. That I get agitated by seeing somebody, I get agitated by seeing something, so I just pluck out my eyes. Or I always feel like going to certain places. I have some old habits, and now I feel like going to some places. So instead of trying to overcome my tendencies or trying to increase my knowledge and thereby trying to, you know, restrain myself, I just cut my legs, you know, amputate my legs. So if I don't have legs, how will I go there? If I pluck out my eyes, how will I see certain sights which will agitate me? How will I read certain books which are not good for my spiritual advancement? But the question is this approach going to work? Simple example to understand this is, when we sleep, we travel here and there, is it not? Any person here sitting here, can vouch for the fact that when we are sleeping, we get dreams. And we travel here and there. Sometimes, you know, we go to our native place, if we have some attachment there. Sometimes our parents may stray away from us, so then we dream about them. Just a minute. So, even if we don't have legs, we are just dreaming. We are not using our legs. We are sleeping on the bed. But still, we are walking here and there. In our dreams, we are seeing certain sights. It means, even when we are sleeping, we are seeing things. One day I saw my friend. He had spectacles. He uses spectacles for his usual daily routine. And when he was sleeping, he forgot to take them off. So, you know, we were joking. Why did you put on your spectacles while sleeping? So he said, you know, so that I can not miss my dreams, you know. Usually I need spectacles to look around. So even when I want to watch my dreams, I need those spectacles. Now it's a funny thing, but if you just notice this, that same person, he uses spectacles, he needs spectacles in his daily affairs. But when he sleeps, is it necessary for one to have spectacles? How many of you who are wearing spectacles right now, when you sleep, you use those spectacles? No, none of us. Is it not? But yet, we have clear vision when we dream. We have clear vision when we see certain sights, certain people in our dreams. Similarly, some person with amputated legs may also be visiting different places in his dreams. So what does it mean? Somebody could say, you know, it's not real actually. A dream is a dream. It's not real. It's not happening. The Bhagavad Gita explains that there are two kinds of bodies that we have. One is the spiritual body One is the material body, one is the subtle body, and we are, you know, we are having a spiritual body, us. Sometimes, you know, people wear a shirt and then they put on a coat over that. So Krishna, you know, we could understand this statement of Krishna by understanding that the subtle body that is there is like the shirt, and on top of it we wear the coat or a blazer, which is like the gross body. So in our daily activities during the day, we are using our gross body. We are using the coat. Whereas when we are sleeping, our gross body is lying there on the bed, but we use our subtle body to travel. Example is, suppose you are dreaming of a tiger behind you. Suppose you are in a dream and you see somebody running after you, trying to kill you, trying to hurt you. Don't you feel fearful? There are moments in our lives when we wake up from our sleep, panting, you know. Finally, you know, I could get out of that terrible situation. So yes, from our ordinary mundane perspective, we are not there. It's not happening in the real sense because our body is lying there on the bed. But from a logical point of view, we are suffering there. When we see somebody running behind us, we feel fear. There is palpitation in the heart. There is sweating. Sometimes when you have a bad dream, you have a, you know, sweating all over your face. So there is some reality associated with a dream. And there is some non-reality associated with the dream. Is it not? Nobody can deny that fact. So, one devotee explained that the fact that we see dreams, the fact that we travel when we are sleeping means these senses that we have, these eyes that we have, these legs that we have, these hands that we have are not responsible in one sense for getting sense input. When I taste certain thing, I put a rasgulla in my mouth and I taste the sweetness, it's not exactly the tongue that tastes the sweetness. Then what is tasting the sweetness? The spirit soul inside, which has spiritual senses, it is tasting the sweetness. It is the spirit soul with the spiritual senses that it has, it hears. But then why are these gross senses required? It's like an instrument. You are reading a newspaper, you are old, and you don't have your spectacles with you. You can't read the fine print, so you use a magnifying glass to read it. Now, is the magnifying glass reading the text? No. But with the help of that magnifying glass, you can read the text properly. You can appreciate it properly. The real vision is in your eyes. Similarly, we are spiritual bodies inside and we are using these gross senses, this eye, these hands, these legs, to get sensory input. But actual touch of sense objects and senses is taking place in the spiritual body. These instruments are just helping us. So, we are going to our original point. I'm trying to tell you how just by taking artificial actions like plucking out your eyes, amputating your legs, cutting off your hands, if you're used to doing certain things with your hands which are not very good for you, it's not going to help. With your eyes plucked out also, with all the visual images that are stored in your brain, you could be thinking about the same things. You could be seeing those same sights which are not very good for you. With amputated legs, with no facility to travel around, you could still be, in your mind, going to certain things, going to certain places. So, just taking an artificial, drastic step is not going to help us. Then what is going to help us? What is going to help us is, as per this purport, it is already explained that one may externally control the senses by some artificial process. But unless the senses are engaged in the transcendental service of the Lord, there is every chance of a fall. So yes, I may do these extreme steps, but then there is every chance of a fall. Somebody came to Prabhupada and he said, Prabhupada, I want to take sannyas. So Prabhupada said, sannyas is not just a whim. Sannyas is not just something that is to be done externally. Sannyas means in your mind you have to be convinced that now Krishna is my only protector. One of the things that is necessary for somebody to take sannyas is that you are all alone in a forest, let's say. And you have to be convinced that Krishna is going to protect me. I may not have any bodyguard with me. I may not have any servant with me. I may not have any disciple with me. But Krishna is my protector. Even when some tiger comes in front of you, you have to understand, since I am surrendered to the Lord, and Lord is present in the heart of this tiger also, so the Lord, if he actually wants me to be protected, will inspire the tiger from within not to harm me, not to kill me. That much faith you have to have. So sannyas is not just an external thing. And Prabhupada explained this, that it's not that, you know, I want to take sannyas, so you'll be given sannyas. It's not an artificial thing. It has to come from within. There has to be some practice to it. Then only you can take sannyas. So I'm just linking it to this artificial thing that, you know, you cannot follow an artificial process. But the senses have to be engaged in the transcendental service of the Lord, and then fall down can be avoided. So we have to be engaged in service. You have to get trained up in what is spiritual life. You have to be engaged, or you have to understand what is pure way of life. Just jumping into something is not going to help us. The next point that Prabhupada makes is, if there are any questions, we take questions after 8:30. So you can just wait for some time, and after 8:30 we can take some questions. Or probably I'll end before that and we'll have some time for questions. The next point that Prabhupada makes is, although the person in full Krishna consciousness may apparently be on the sensual plane, so he's engaged in ordinary day-to-day activities, because of his being Krishna conscious, he has no attachment to sensual activities. He does not feel that, you know, without those activities, he'll be doomed. Our usual conception is, you know, I am used to a certain way of life. Sometimes somebody comes to this temple and we tell him that better to rise early as much as possible. You can do all your activities. You can read the Bhagavad Gita during the daytime. Not that, you know, Bhagavad Gita's potency diminishes if you read it during the daytime. No. You can take prasadam whenever you want. But the limitation is on our side. If we are reading some spiritual book at night, we are feeling sleepy. So we will not be able to take advantage of this book. Sometimes, you know, we tell somebody that, good that you are reading, but try to read it as much early as possible in the morning. And he could say, you know, not possible for me. Not possible for me. It's very difficult for me. And, you know, I'm doing it whenever I want. Sometimes I'm in the train and open the Bhagavad Gita. It's good. It's better than, you know, not reading it. But still better is reading it at a time which is favorable. And sometimes you could see devotees also who are, you know, who are doing jobs, who are carrying out their usual day-to-day activities. There are few people who stay in this ashram. But majority of people who are connected to this temple are staying in their homes and they are practicing spiritual life. So somebody could understand or could perceive that for practicing spiritual life, it's very necessary to stay here only. But no, there are so many people outside who are living in their homes and they are still practicing spiritual life. Now, for those people who are already connected to this temple, who are already practicing or trying to practice spiritual life, are they engaged in sensual activities or are they practicing spiritual life? People staying in this ashram, you could say, no, you are staying in this ashram, you know, whole day you are near the Lord. So you are practicing spiritual life, but what about people outside? Are they practicing? So here the key is given by Prabhupada. He says, because he is attached to Krishna, because of his being Krishna conscious, he has no attachment to sensual activities. So he may be doing certain things. He may be going to a job, interacting with his boss, carrying out his, you know, daily activities, which he used to do even before he became spiritual. But because he does not have any attachment to it, because those things are not binding him in one sense, that's why he is able to be Krishna conscious. That's why he is able to practice pure life, even though he is connected with activities that are apparently, you know, seemingly not very spiritual. So you see some person going to a job and, you know, you hear that he's, oh, how could he be a devotee? He works in the same office as I see him eating lunch just like I eat my lunch. But then what is the difference? The difference is he is Krishna conscious. He's always thinking about his relationship with Krishna. One example that comes to mind is, everyone has seen these post-it notes. We have seen this. We use this usually. You want to use it, you write something on this post-it note, is it not? And then you paste it to your paper or, you know, maybe on your fridge for a reminder and like that. Now, when you are done with it, when you have done this task, you no longer need this reminder. You just take it out. Is it not? It has served its purpose. Now, why do we use these post-it notes? If you know, these are very costly. Not if you have a piece of paper this size, it comes for, you know, a throwaway price. Post-it notes have to be bought. But still people buy it. Why? Because it has a certain utility that when you want it, it sticks. And when you don't want it, just remove it out. And there's no mark left on the object on which you pasted this. Is it not? So when it was needed to serve its purpose, it got attached. And when there's no need for it to serve its purpose. It's done. The job is done. You just remove it and throw it. You no longer have any mark there. Now suppose you take an ordinary piece of paper and you apply some glue on it, you know, the usual glue that you get, and you try to paste it. One thing is, when you are done and you try to remove it, either the paper will be torn, you know, if you are having glue from a good brand, the paper will be torn, it won't come out, the part that is sticking, or if you take out the paper, there will be mark left on the object. Is it not? So both things are not desirable. So something like this, you know, if you have ordinary objects in this world which get attached when they want, they get detached when they want, why can't a person who's practicing spirituality, why can't a person who's practicing purity practice this life of attachment when he wants, doing activities in the outside world when he wants, but in his heart he's detached. In his heart he's meditating on Krishna. In his heart he's trying to follow the orders of his spiritual master. Very easy to understand. One statement that Prabhupada makes is, in the next sentence, the Krishna conscious person is concerned only with the satisfaction of Krishna and nothing else. Therefore, he is transcendental to all attachment and detachment. So his attachment and his detachment, his activities and his not doing any activities, it is not based on his preference. I like to do this. I like to do that. No, it's not based on that. It's on what is advised by the Lord. It is based on what is advised by the devotees who are dear to the Lord, who are just repeating his message in a way that we could apply it, in a way that we could understand it in our own lives, in our own situation. And therefore, he rises above the situation. Sometimes, how do we understand this? That I have my problems, I have my attachments, I have my detachments. But how do we understand that just by being conscious of satisfaction of Krishna, the Krishna conscious person is concerned only with the satisfaction of Krishna, and therefore he is not attached and he is not detached. How do we understand this? Sometimes when we are traveling, here you have many skyscrapers in this area, and you know, usually you could sometimes come across a person who's coming from a, you know, small time town, small village, and he comes to this city. I don't know, he looks like this, skyscraper, you know. He tries to see, my God, this is huge. This city is very much advanced, huge skyscrapers. Sometimes we ourselves might be amazed when we come across a big skyscraper. So these skyscrapers are, you know, built by human beings. But when we look at it from the ground, it appears like a huge building. Now consider that you are traveling to some place using an aeroplane. You board the aeroplane. You get into the aeroplane starts climbing, starts gaining altitude. When you are up there, probably you could be above the same skyscraper in the same city. But from there, high up there, how does the skyscraper appear to be? Appears to be tiny, appears to be small. So did the skyscraper vanish for you? No, it did not. But it just got minimized in size. So similarly, when we are not having pure principles in our life, we are somewhere down there. So, you know, any small problem, any attachment that we have, any detachment that we have, and we are trying to overcome it, my God, such a huge problem. From my childhood, I'm used to, you know, getting up late in the morning. From my childhood, I'm used to staying up late in night. And now when I'm trying to become spiritual, some devotee told me that try to get up early in the morning, not possible for me. It's too difficult for me. But when you get attached to Krishna, Krishna is the source of all purity. So you also slowly start becoming purified. Now, you start, you know, in one sense, you start increasing your altitude. You start gaining height. So from high above there, the same problems, after some time, they don't vanish from your life. Krishna consciousness or spiritual life is not a process of closing your eyes to problems in your life. No, you have to keep your eyes open. But because you rise above the problems, those same problems, they now appear to be small to you. Just like for a person in an airplane, the huge buildings, the huge bridges, everything appears to be tiny. They don't vanish from his sight. So problems will never vanish from your life. Problems will always be there. Attachments, detachments, this, that, problems, you know, they'll always be there. But when you're high up there, those same problems appear tiny, and so it does not disturb you. Okay, you know, there is some problem, but then I have to go ahead with my life. I have to go on, you know, living my life, trying to live my life based on purity and based on pure principles. Then Prabhupada mentions, If Krishna wants, the devotee can do anything which is ordinarily undesirable. And if Krishna does not want, he shall not do that which he would have ordinarily done for his own satisfaction. Same thing. That if it pleases Krishna, if it pleases Krishna that I chant his name, I'll chant his name. If it pleases Krishna that I study Bhagavad Gita, maybe, you know, just one verse a day. May not be, you know, huge book every day. Just one verse every day. Okay, I'll read it. Although, you know, I'm not used to this Sanskrit and I'm not used to coming to this temple every day, but still, for giving pleasure to the Lord, I'll do it. So because he's not putting himself in the center, usually our life is based on, I want to do this, I want to do that. I don't want to do this, I don't want to do that. So you are in the center of your life. And then you base your life based on your preferences, based on your aversions. But when you bring Krishna or the Lord in the center of your life, then what happens is things become simplified. You go to a pond, pond of water. You throw a stone somewhere, any spot in that pond. There are ripples that are formed, is it not? And those ripples start expanding. You take another stone and throw at some other point. There will be some ripples formed from that point. At one point of time, these ripples, when they are expanding, they collide with each other. They intersect at some point. Now, take another situation where you throw one stone into a pond. At the same spot, as the ripples are forming, as they are expanding, you throw another stone at the same spot. What happens is, now the same ripples get magnified. Is it not? So when we don't have Krishna in the center, when we have our preferences in center, they'll collide with each other. There is going to be friction. There are going to be problems in our lives. But when we base our life in a way that we give preference to Krishna, we give preference to Lord, we give preference to principles that are laid by the Lord, then all our life will be magnified. All the happiness that we have will be magnified and all the problems that we have will not be magnified. They'll, you know, they'll disappear. Why? Because there is no more friction, there is no more interaction. Any decision you want to take, you just, you know, see or consult somebody. Is this what will help me in my spiritual life? Yes? Okay, I take that decision. Expands. This decision, will it help? Yes. You know, then it does not intersect. Then we don't have any problem. So, a devotee can do something that is ordinarily undesirable and he could do something that is not do something that is ordinarily desirable based on not his personal choices but based on what Krishna or the devotees would advise to him. Then Prabhupada makes this point that therefore, to act or not to act is within his control because he acts only under the direction of Krishna. This consciousness is the causeless mercy of the Lord which the devotee can achieve in spite of his being attached to the sensual platform. So, Prabhupada mentions that, you know, this tendency to base your life on spirituality, as you go on, you know, increasing this tendency in your life, you'll get causeless mercy of the Lord, which the devotee can achieve in spite of his being attached to the sensual platform. So here, you know, the riddle is solved. That somebody may apparently be engaged in ordinary day-to-day activities, but because he bases his decisions on the advice of the Lord, he gets causeless mercy of the Lord. And ordinarily, probably he could not have, you know, led such a pure life. But just by showing to the Lord that, yes, I would like to, you know, follow my life based on your principles, he gets mercy. One devotee mentioned a very nice example to understand this, that, you know, you go to some swimming pool and you're standing there and you want to jump into that swimming pool. But ordinarily, when you just jump from the swimming, you know, from the periphery of the swimming pool, your fall is, you know, a little bit because water is full. So you don't get much pleasure. To get much pleasure, what do? There is a diving board. Seen the diving board? Swimming pools? So you jump two or three times on it and it throws you up. And then when you jump into the swimming pool, you get a lot of pleasure. So he was saying that ordinarily when we try to, you know, enjoy, it's not going to give us happiness. But when you climb on that diving board and, you know, jump through two or three times, the diving board propels you. It pushes you upward. And then when you dive into that swimming pool, then you get happiness. So when we, you know, pray to the Lord, when we try to convey to the Lord that, you know, now I want to change, slowly but surely, you are like on that diving board and, you know, the mercy of the Lord throws you up. Then you can lead your life based on purity. You can base your life based on happiness, not get disturbed by different situations. Here we have completed the purport, that is, you know, the explanation that is given to this verse. One thing that also needs to be understood is the word-to-word translation of Vidhayatma. Vidhayatma, Prabhupada translates as one who follows regulated freedom. In the translation also, the translation goes, but a person free from all attachment and aversion and able to control his senses through regulative principles of freedom can obtain the complete mercy of the Lord. Any person could ask me this question, that regulated principles of freedom, how do we understand this term? Do you get this? Where the, you know, where there could be a confusion. He's using the word regulated, means there are some rules, there are some regulations, there are some strictures, there are some boundaries for your activities. But he's saying regulated principles of freedom. Now, if I'm free, then I should not have any boundaries. That is freedom, is it not? I am free, you know, you want freedom. When India wanted freedom, you know, it wanted freedom from British rule. So now I will decide what will be the laws in this country. That is freedom. If you have, you know, like previously, if you have 1 lakh Britishers in India, and then British government says, okay, I'll give you freedom, but I'll keep 20,000 people still in the government. Is that freedom? No, ordinarily. Is it not? So somebody could get confused. Why does Krishna use this word? One who follows regulated freedom or regulated principles of freedom. These two concepts ordinarily are opposite. They are diametrically opposite. Either you are free or you are under rules. If you are under rules, you are not free. And if you are, you know, having rules, you are not free. And if you are free, there is nothing that is, you know, binding you. You can do whatever you want. So it's very important for us to understand this concept also, in addition to the explanation that is given by Prabhupada. One way to understand is, I'll ask you certain questions. Let's say I bind one person, maybe our very nice devotee here, Gopinath Chandra Prabhu. I take a long rope and I bind him up completely. He can't move his hands, he can't move his legs. Is he bound up? Yes. Is he free? No, because he can't move, he can't, you know, go here and there wherever he wants. He's just bound up. So how do we understand this? We can't understand this. I'll give you another example, or I'll ask you another question. Many times we see, you know, animals, if you have some dogs at your home, in the home you tie him up to a rope, or ordinarily you see people taking their dogs along the road with a collar in their neck and with a rope attached to it. Or sometimes you go to some village and there is a cow which is attached to a chain, which is attached to a rope, to a pole, is it not? Now my question is that cow bound up or is that cow free? Both. I'll tell you why. It's bound up because there is something in the cow's neck that prevents it from going here and there. Is it not? But why is it free? On what basis can we understand that a cow is free? I'll just share something. Usually animals like goats, cows, or even, you know, our city example, somebody could say, you know, why speak about villages? Why not speak about cities where we are staying? Why do you need a leash? Why do you need a rope? Why do you need a chain to, you know, be around your dog's neck? Don't you love your dog? Don't we love our dogs? Do we bind up our children like that? No, we love our children. So, the collar that is put around a dog, is it a sign of your hatred towards a dog or is it a sign of your love towards a dog? Can anybody answer this question? Can you pass on the mic to him?
It's a sign of love.
Yeah. But, I mean, there are so many other people in your life also whom you love. Why don't you bind them also? Is it okay if I have this small discussion with you?
Yeah. Because a dog doesn't have the intelligence.
Is it not?
Which human beings have.
Yeah. So your children have intelligence. There are other people in your life whom you know they have sufficient amount of intelligence and they'll not wander off away from you into places, into areas which are not good for them. You have already told them, see, this is your school, this is your home, I'll pick you up, and you know, this is the road on which, even if I don't turn up, you travel on this road, take help from somebody who stays in a neighboring place. So they have intelligence, but a dog, you can't tell him that. So your dog needs your protection. You want to add to this?
No.
All right. So your dog needs, thank you so much. Your dog needs your protection. So a leash around the neck of a dog is not a sign of somebody hating it. In fact, it is the opposite. It is the sign of somebody loving that dog. That if I don't put this leash around the dog can run away. I don't have that speed to match the dog's speed. And he can run away somewhere. He might get hit by some vehicle on the road. So that is how I prevent it from going here and there. That is how I prevent it from getting hurt, from getting problems in his life. So the rules and regulations that are sometimes mentioned in scriptures are usually very detestable. You know, you come to some temple and you read some rule. Oh, why? You know, why are you? Why does God, you know, want me to follow these rules? See, outside, you know, there are so many places where there are no rules. I can do what I want. There are billboards which say, I get what I want. So everywhere, you know, concept is freedom, freedom, freedom. But when we come to spiritual life, first thing that puts off is talking to some boys, asking them, you know, in this college that we have a program, very few people come to the spiritual program. So I was asking them, you know, we have such nice philosophy, we have such nice understanding, we have such nice deities to take darshan of. What is it that to a major part prevents people from practicing spiritual life? So he was telling me, some students were telling me, that you know, mostly it is the fear that when I go there, you know, there will be rules. Don't eat this, don't eat that. So, you know, that is too much for me. I want to be free. Then I told him, because this is a medical college, so, you know, they are more used to getting analogies or examples in terms of diseases and all. So I asked them, in your medical college, in a hospital that is connected to your medical college, 10 years back, how many people used to come? What was the strength of your hospital? So they gave me a certain number. Told them, now what is the strength? Say, increased number. What do you think in the future? Will it go down or will it increase? He says, no, further increase also. So I told him that now as we are becoming more and more free, apparently, you know, it should lead to more enjoyment, more happiness. And certainly, you know, getting admitted to a hospital is not anybody's definition of, you know, getting happy. So why is it like that? So they say, you know, sometimes people are drunk and, you know, they're traveling in midnight and they get hit or they hit somebody. They were telling me, you know, you go to some restaurant and, you know, not very hygienic places where the items are cooked. So you get, you know, stomach upset. And food poisoning is a very common phenomenon, they told me, in this hospital. So I told them that, so it appears that when I ask you to take pure food, spiritual food, not going to any restaurant, where food is not offered to Krishna, where it is not made in a purified way, apparently I'm trying to restrict your freedom. But when you eat in places where food is not cooked in a very nice way, where food is not cooked by pure people, is it restricting your freedom or is it giving you more freedom? Because you end up eating the wrong thing. You end up eating and getting a stomach upset. You are free to drink liquor. But then when you get hit, what is the problem? Where do you actually end up? Do you end up getting more freedom or do you end up getting more restrictions? So there is usually a debate always throughout the ages. This is not a new thing. There is always a debate between security and between independence. If you forego, if you compromise a little bit of your independence, you get increased security. When that dog allows itself to get a leash, a collar around its neck, it gets increased security. Now no ordinary dog can harm him. Sometimes you see this, you know, late at night, some person has a dog, you know, not very strong dog, and there are 10 other dogs, street dogs, and you know, they are trying to bark on him, they are trying to threaten him, but this dog who has a protector, who has a, you know, his master with him, he's just standing regally, he's not affected by the barking. And sometimes you see two street dogs fighting, you know, they're so much affected by each other. This dog barks, you know, he gets back, you know, he barks, you know, they get affected. Sometimes you could observe this, that a dog who has a master with him, although he has this collar with him, he knows that he's going to be protected. Even if all these 10 dogs come and attack me, my master has a huge stick with one whack, All these dogs will get scattered away. So when you forego a little bit of your independence, you get increased security. But if you want increased independence, then you have to forego a little bit of your security. Is it not? This is a normal principle. So this is why here it is mentioned that one who follows regulated principles of freedom. You go to a school, they'll put you in the junior most standard, first standard, second standard. You say, no, I want to become big. You know, I want to work, start working. I want to amass huge amount of money. Can you put me directly into 10th standard? No, there is a process. First standard, second standard, third standard, fourth standard. That is how it goes. You want to play a game. Football has certain rules. Is it not? You can't just play randomly. You can't, you know, the ball is flying mid-air. So if I kick with my hand, you know, it will be very accurate. No, there are rules. You cannot use your hands. You have to use only your legs. So not only in terms of education, where you get knowledge, even for something which is as, you know, apparently non-spiritual as enjoyment. You want to enjoy the sport. You want to enjoy hockey. You want to enjoy football. You want to enjoy cricket. Even for enjoyment, you have to follow rules. Somebody wants to play tennis. You know, you have to stand at a certain point. You have to hit the ball in a certain way. You say, you know, I'm not happy with this. I want to hit it like this. Okay, you know, you go and play in your home. You can't play here. Is it not? So wherever we see that there is some progress, some enjoyment, or some advancement that is desired, everywhere in all spheres of life, we see that we have to forego a little bit of our independence. And in that sense, we get little bit of more, you know, advancement, security, and like that. I'll just end very fast. I had just one point about this. So, one devotee was explaining, with this point we'll end. One devotee was explaining that here, you see all these principles. But in the spiritual world, what is the principle? The principle is, just see, you know, suppose you are with your boss. You work in some company, you have some boss. Or for students, you know, replace the word boss with your teacher. So you go to school, you have a teacher. Teacher tells you, you have to sit on this bench, you should not move around. When I speak, you should not speak. You know, certain rules she gives you. You patiently obey all those rules. What happens is, you win the trust of your teacher. For a person who's working, if he works according to the expectations of his boss, he wins the trust of his boss. What happens with that? In the course of winning that trust, yes, he has to forego a little bit of his independence. He wants to leave early, you know, 5:30 he wants to go home, but his boss expects him to work more. So it's okay, 6:30 every day, just because the boss wants. So he makes his boss happy. Boss gives him greater responsibilities. Now, you know, he has more chances to get a promotion. A student who follows all the rules of a school, you know, he'll be very much liked by the teacher. He'll get some special tips maybe, you know, he'll get some special notes maybe from the teacher. I have seen you, I have marked you, you're always, you know, sitting quietly in the classroom. Whereas this boy, he always wants to exercise his independence. He never sits where I want him to sit. He never wants to read the textbooks that I want him to read. So, you know, he is neglected in one sense. So what is the cost of the independence? The cost of the independence is that you have less security. You have less problems. In the spiritual world, also, there are certain rules. Based on those rules, you become dear to the Lord. And what happens? Just by that springboard example, you get elevated much more. Here in this world, how much can your boss give to you? How much can he give? He can give you a little bit more money. He can give you a more advanced, maybe, you know, post in the hierarchy. Not beyond that. But Krishna, because he is God, he is unlimited. If he desires to give you, can anybody stop him? Is there some limitation to it? No. So it is sometimes described that when Krishna wants to give you mercy, your two hands will fall short. Why? Because Krishna has unlimited hands. Showed his Virat Roop to Arjun in Bhagavad Gita. Very famous, you know, picture usually we find. When he wants to give you, can you get enough in your hands? It will overflow. So, although we understand this by a material example, that just by pleasing your boss, you get something more, and just by pleasing your teacher, you get something more. That same example, when you apply to the Lord, in terms of spirituality, the benefits that you get is, you cannot imagine it. Just by foregoing a little bit of your independence, for the sake of pleasing the Lord, the mercy that you would get is unfathomable. It is undescribable. It is said, you take one step towards the Lord and the Lord takes 100 steps towards you. But what is the difference is, not only in terms of quantity, but also in terms of quality. What is our one step? What is our step? Such a small step. What is Krishna's step? In the form of Vamandev, in the incarnation of Vamandev, in 3 steps, he covered the whole universe. So what is the span of his step? So if by taking one step from our side in the direction of the Lord, he is going to take 100 steps in our direction. And is completely convinced that this person, you know, is a dependable person, is a person who's actually serious about practicing spirituality, and he takes 100 steps in our direction. What do you think our state will be? So I'll just conclude with this. The conclusion is that by practicing certain principles and by foregoing a little bit of independence, that is anyways, you know, not going to be helpful to us, we win the trust of the Lord. And by winning the trust of the Lord, we get a lot of His mercy. And by getting mercy of the Lord, we get dear to the Lord. And at the end of our life, we'll perfect our life and go back home. The easiest process to please Krishna, as given in the scriptures, especially in these times today, when you don't have much time to do puja, you know, when you don't have much time to follow all the other rules and regulations, is given by the Lord Himself, says, chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. So I'll tell you this mantra and we can chant together. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram Hare. By regularly chanting this mantra, whenever we get time, wherever, you know, it's possible, we'll get easy access to the mercy of the Lord. And in this way, we'll perfect our lives. So thank you very much, Hare Krishna. Hopefully, I have, you know, helped you in some way. If somebody has any questions, the class is officially over. If somebody wants to leave, you can leave. Somebody has any questions, we can take a few questions. All right, thank you very much for your attention and patience. Srila Prabhupada ki, Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki, Sri Sri Radha Gopinath Bhagwan ki, Anantakoti Vaishnavrinda ki.